Okay, we're going to start, and this is Maurice Schmidt, October 8th, 2019.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to have a conversation here about you, the subject you know best, which is you. Where were you born?
New Braunfels, Texas. B-R-A-U-N-F-E-L-S. It's not far from here.
No, we're in Lakeway, Texas right
now. Oh, yeah.
And you can just look at me and we'll have this conversation.
Sure.
Tell me about your parents.
My parents, they were both born, and my grandparents too, in Hungary.
Mm.
And they came over pretty young. my grandparents came over, I think, already in middle-aged. But my parents were, my father was born in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother and mother were born in Hungary. And my father, I think, was also born there. Rest of my family, some of them were from Europe, and we had a number of other family from Hungary, but then then we settled in New Braunfels.
Okay, so you...
My grandmother and grandfather, mm-hmm. and on my father's side, we settled in New Braunfels, and for a while, my grandparents from Hungary also lived in New Braunfels. Hardly remember them because I was 3 years old. I think they died shortly.
What did they die of, do you remember? I only ask because often our historical record is lost, you know, and our DNA and our medical history sometimes impacts greatly on the next generation.
That's true. They were born and lived in Hungary, and my grandparents spent quite a few years in New Braunfels. They learned English and broken English and spoke with an accent. And my mother knew quite a few European languages and Hungarian and others. Well, she learned English and German. My father did the same thing. They learned German and when they moved to New Braunfels and English wherever and when they came to the States.
Okay.
So they were pretty, especially my mother, she also studied French, and she was pretty much of a linguist, actually.
And what was your parents' profession?
He was a dry goods, we were in dry goods business, clothing mm-hmm. store. The building is still there, Jacob Schmidt and Son.
So everybody knew Jacob Schmidt?
Yeah, that was my grandfather, family, on my father's side, my grandparents. And I don't know, they came from Europe, I think it was before the First World War, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
And what was it like growing up in New Braunfels?
It was idyllic. It was very nice. It was a smaller town, still a small town, but it was a small town, and you'd almost have to go back into the 50s to see what life was like. Because cars were different, and it wasn't as fast of a world.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't get on airplanes until we were adults. A town, it's still a nice town, it hasn't changed all that much. So we grew up in a small town, and it was about 15,000 people. And of course, everybody knew each other. These people had been there, a lot of mostly German immigrants, and then other European immigrants. There was three or four Jewish families, and they were all from Hungary. And so everybody kind of knew each other pretty
sure.
Well, yeah.
When, did you have air conditioning, for example?
Later on we did, but we had fans. I grew up with open windows and then ceiling fans and fans. You have fans with various amounts of noise.
But indoor plumbing?
Oh, yeah. We did have that. Yeah. And
And lots of your parents' customers, I bet, were agriculturally oriented?
It was a small town and a lot of farms and a lot of people. Even when I was growing up, even to this day, I would meet all elderly people, and they knew my grandparents.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. When they were kids. They would have been kids when my grandparents were there, but they remembered.
So growing up, or in general, do you have someone who made a big impact on your life?
I think my parents and grandparents and other people, we have a very nice, close family. And when I was about in 1941, of course, World War II came along. I have two brothers. One is 16 months older than me, and we're really born at the same time. But my oldest brother was 13 years older, and he was already going into the Navy during World War II, the Pacific War. And he was almost like another father. He was somewhat distant, but just kind of a different life than what the two of us had growing up in that small town.
I can appreciate that, the age difference.
Age difference, and he was in the Navy, and he'd been overseas in the Pacific. And
so he wouldn't know you that way. You were little babies when he left.
We were babies.
He came back, and you had changed.
Changed a bit, and he was, like I said, a second father. Just the way I perceived, how you feel about a person. Because with my other brother, we were just 16 months apart, and we would fight like cats and dogs and everything, but
that's normal.
It was normal, and my other brother, who was older, it was like I said, a second father, mm-hmm. and it was a different rapport.
Were you artistic from early mm-hmm. age?
Yeah, I think about the time I was about 14, 15, I was in art. My mother encouraged me, and she got me some very nice art teachers that. And they were very good in terms of they could teach you things.
Did you ever imagine that you would become an art teacher yourself?
As I was considering it, even and that was close to, I went through high school, and then during my college years, I majored in art.
Okay.
My dad gave each of the boys a choice, and that's what I chose, and that's what I stuck with.
What did your parents think? Boy, you'll never make it in that profession. Why don't you get into the dry goods business?
Yes. It was a wonderful store, family store, and was there for a lot of years after I grew up and everything. And my father, grandfather, were very dedicated to it. In those days, your customers were almost like a second family.
Sure.
And
you were the lifeblood of the community, really.
Well,
you were the lifeline for the community.
Yeah, they were. They were. Everybody came through the store. I got to say, in about a month, you could say almost all the people in town would have passed through our store. Everybody knew everybody. And at that time, when I was early teens, I got into art, and I used to, when I started sketching, I used to make sketches of people while they were in the store, which was very annoying to my grandparents. They wanted me to wait on customers. I would just kind of hide behind some of the clothing racks and do drawings, and but I kind of knew where I was going.
Did they let you? Was there a friction there?
They wanted me. My father and grandfather wanted me to go into the store business, because it was a very prosperous business. And
it's art, their legacy too.
That's their legacy, definitely, because my grandfather had started it, and my father, and it was a very fine, it was a very good place. I mean, it was very, people felt at home there. And they were very good with their customers.
So did you feel guilty about not going into it?
A little bit. I had qualms, but I knew that
Seems to have worked out.
It did work out. My mother knew instinctively that I wasn't going to go in the business. She just knew that. Mm-hmm. My father and grandfather hoped that I would. But I learned a lot from working there, waiting on people.
What did you learn?
I learned how to talk to people of all different ages and feelings and everything, because we were taught how to deal with customers and be nice to adults. Respectful to everyone.
So that must have stood you in good stead as teach.
All my life.
You knew how to get along with people.
People, yeah, hear what their view is and what they have to say, and be aware of the other. You know, it did help me with my teaching and my artwork as well, observing people.
So who was the biggest influence in your art, would you say? What groups?
Which groups? I would say the old masters. Rembrandt and then the Italian painters, the old 14, 15 mm-hmm. old masters, and then a lot of the modern masters, German expressionists, mm-hmm. and modernists and the Mexican art was a profound influence on my work, which because I studied, had actually done some studying in Mexico. And studied the murals there and met some very fine artists there. And it still influences my work to this day. At that time, in the 50s, art was going almost totally abstract. Figurative art was not the mainstream at that time. There still was some there. But I liked art that dealt with life, that I could see. Everything I've done, if you look through them.
I can see that. Your choice of subject is...
choice of subject is what's...
people who are active in their day-to-day lives. And
right. It's a day-to-day life and then seeing the beauty of it, which... the gestures and movements of people, mm-hmm. actions. He's being in the dry goods business, you know, we'd be meeting strangers all the time. And there was a large German community. You hear a lot of German there. And so I got used to accents. And my parents, grandparents, had Hungarian accents, and they learned English. So I've never had problems with people that had accents. So I'm very at home with that.
It gives you an appreciation of different cultures.
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. That's one of the things I'm real interested in, is different cultures.
So if... someone is watching this generations from now, well, what would you like them to know about you, the life you've led, and what you've produced?
Well, it was a very good life. We had a close home life, and religion was very important. My grandparents were very religious. We were Jewish. And there were about three other religious Jewish families in New Braunfels. We all knew each other, and we went to synagogue. San Antonio.
That's quite a trip.
Yeah, well, at that time, just about an hour and a half away, but it was a big trip because mm-hmm. we were going from a small town, mm-hmm. and then you go to the big city.
Right.
And it was interesting, very interesting. And then we'd see the high holidays and the big city. And so my grandparents, had to learn English, which they did. Mm-hmm. And so there were different languages. My mother spoke Hungarian, and she could speak some French, and they all spoke German, and then English.
Oh, that helped in commerce, because I suppose most of your customers would be German speaking.
Yeah, lots of them were German, yeah. And maybe most at first. For my oldest brother, remembered it mostly as a German town, because mm-hmm. he was about 12 years older than me.
Let's talk about your art for a minute.
Sure.
I was fortunate to walk through your beautiful apartment and look at some of your pieces. Which one would you say is your favorite of what's there?
One of the pieces I most like is what I call a Torah burial. It's in our room. I think you've seen that one there.
Yes.
And that's a... I've done a number of paintings that contain, based on Jewish ritual, which I've seen in taking out the Torahs from the Ark and the whole Sabbath ceremonials, mm-hmm. because we would, on the high holidays, we would always...
And I had never seen anything like that. Maybe you should explain what the burial was, why it took place, and its
okay,
significance.
Okay. You know, I've never seen one, and I don't know of anybody that has. But I've been intrigued by it because I'm fascinated. A lot of my early memories of those on the high holy days were the Jewish rituals. And these were elderly people, many years older than me, these rabbis and cantors that we had in the synagogue. None of them were born in America, maybe a few later. But so it was all accents. Hungarian accents, when they broken accents, when they spoke English, and there was a temperament, there's a whole, it was another world.
Kind of a different aura, I guess.
A different aura, yeah. And when family would get together, it would be mixtures of Hungarian, broken English, and all those things.
So the idea was that nothing lasts forever, I guess, and the mm-hmm. Torah got you worn, I guess, as it was...
Yeah.
Furled and unfurled and,
it
and
furled
used.
And,
and so they had a burial for the actual
That is something that I had read about.
Okay.
About the Torahs. All I heard about was that when Torahs were no longer usable, they're very so sacred that they can't just be thrown away. So they are, and this is all that I've heard, they are buried like a human being. I guess they put them in a coffin, and they have a kind of a funeral for them, as if they were persons, because Torahs are not allowed to be burned or destroyed, so they would have been buried. And that's a ritual I've never seen. It's in a book I wrote that it's something that fascinates me, but I've never seen it.
Mm-hmm. You have another picture in there of your son's bar mitzvah.
Yes, those I've seen. Those are there. I was there for that. But
how did you feel that day?
Oh, it was wonderful, because the people who taught him were European Jews. So they had this European background, mostly even a Holocaust background. And so they had a private history that was beyond any of us. And sometimes they would talk about it. And they all had these heavy accents. It was a world unto itself. And I was fascinated with it. And these were the people that, when my son was bar mitzvah, that they were on the synagogue. They were the cantors and the rabbis and so on. So you'd see those special movements. We were in a conservative synagogue.
But you choose as your subjects people working in the fields.
Yes, that was also because I grew up with that. And then when I was living in Kingsville, that's what I saw. Mm-hmm. And I've always, from the beginning, felt the biblical connotations of the agriculture, of the
because the valley,
the valleys, and the you know, the Bible is pretty much almost an agricultural compendium, because it deals with the seasons, the growth seasons in Israel, which were similar to South Texas. Very similar to Texas, to where I was living.
Arid, but fruitful,
and you had growing grains, you had crops, animals, various animals, and herdsmen. And these were people who dealt with cattle and goats, sheep, which all of which I saw all the time.
And then they would bring the fruits of their harvest to the temple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a harvest day. And there's a wonderful thing, I don't know where that saying occurs in the Torah, in the Bible, it's when Jacob was asked by Pharaoh. Pharaoh and Jacob met, what is your occupation? So Pharaoh asked Jacob, and he said, herdsmen are we, both we and our ancestors. That still rings with me, you know, because that was a herdsman culture where I grew up. And I saw
all of life centered around it,
even at that time, because you got small farms and cattle and sheep and goats all the time. And I still miss that. We never raised them, but they were so close. I mean,
in what way do you miss it?
You know, I still miss being able to see it, just to feel it. I love petting goats and sheep. If I ever see them, I always want to pet them and everything. And the whole scene, when I'd see them in places where you, places where I'd been, where I'd see herds of them, you know, in the fields. Mm-hmm. You know, always made me feel like I was back in the Bible. That's where my ancestors, that's what they did.
It hasn't moved changed the herds in and a way.
The herd, in a way, it's changed a lot. You got the vehicles and everything. But the growth cycles, the harvest cycles, which in Kingsville I would see from planting. Because when I took my, especially when I took my son to weekly services for his bar mitzvah, so every week we would go to Corpus Christi for services, and we'd pass farms and fields, and I could see the whole agricultural cycle from the planting, and then the, you know, the corn and the cotton, and from the growing, and then the blooming and the ripening, and then the harvest. I got to see all those things cycle. When we went to services, we'd see parts of it.
Wasn't just showing up at the grocery store magically.
No.
In fact, it was life or death if you didn't survive.
I was into art already as a teenager. And I'd see these things in the fields growing. And I was looking for, we didn't go to church, we went to a synagogue. Mm-hmm. There were very few Jewish people. I was looking for Jewish metaphors, kind of. And then I started seeing them, you know, people plowing their fields with tractors. And then I could see the relationship between a chariot and a tractor, mm-hmm. you know, these two-wheeled, three-wheeled things.
You were good at interpreting.
Yeah, but that's where it starts coming together. Yes. See, that's where it started coming together. I grew up with those with those fields, and all the times we would go, the high holidays, of course, was the harvest season and everything. Mm-hmm. The farmers were busy all the time. It came together.
Let me ask you about your art. Did you think you would be a teacher? Or
I knew pretty early, when I was a teenager already, I knew I wanted to spend my life doing primarily something to do with art. Mm-hmm. Seeing art, doing it, painting it, which I did, studying it.
But giving back and teaching others is a different thing.
Yeah, but I enjoyed that very much.
What was it that you enjoyed about it?
I enjoyed, really, I guess, waking people's minds up to these things. A lot of my students, since I taught at A&M in Kingsville, they were also had grown up on farms. They grew up in an agricultural world.
So you're a kindred spirit.
So it was a kindred spirit, and I kind of understood what they were doing, and kind of envied that because I'm, I didn't care a lot for working in my father's store selling clothing, which was also a great experience unto itself, a different experience, because there I learned to meet all kinds of people and how to converse with strangers and be, do a nice job of it, make you aware of
that. Get along with others.
Getting along with others.
Some artists are loners.
Yeah.
Some people can't teach.
They can't, but I was able to do it. Mainly, I just showed them by example. And of course, when you talk about other artists, I studied as many great artists as I could, closely, their methods, their movies about them, books, and read about them because I just loved it. I got acquainted with the mediums, worked in all the different mediums, sculpture, painting, which I still do.
Tell me about that process of writing. That must have been different.
Yeah, the writing, I also enjoyed, and it came natural to me. I've written books. I think I have one here, Life and Art, and all of that. But I loved writing also, and then drawing and painting, of course, would have been number one. but I did a lot of writing, some of it descriptive, some of it remembering, and then a book, A Life in Art, and the Tabernacle book that I wrote.
Yes,
that's
a very interesting subject.
Yeah, it's an obscure, not that much other than in the Bible. You know, it's not. But I read about it in the Torah, in the Bible, because mm-hmm. it's in there, you know, the building of it,
it's
selecting the materials and the fashioning of it, and it was just mesmerizing to me, because it's a part, we read it, that those parts of the Bible would be in some ways boring to a lot of people because it didn't have big adventures, didn't have the fights and wars so much. It was descriptions of the what they were to make, how they made it, the materials they made it with, all of that thing.
And the trials and tribulations of making it.
Trials and tribulations of it. And also it brought to my mind, clarified for me, the ritual in the synagogue, because I could see the same colors, blues, purples, scarlets, golds, and whites. You see that in synagogues all the time. The Torah wrappings and the unfurling of the Torah and the talises. Have you ever been to a synagogue when you see the prayer shawls and everything? And it all started to come together. That's all I can say. So that when I went to synagogue, I knew those scenes. I knew where they originated from, how far back they go. And I could see in the rituals the...
Hang on for a second.
Sure.
We have some competition.
Okay.
It's like trying to teach your class. And
I'm used to it.
The door's open and somebody's making a ruckus in the hall.
Yeah.
And they're not paying attention to you.
Exactly.
They're interested in somebody else.
Yes. But it's... so the ritual of the synagogue, when I was a child, I was just looked at it, listened to it, chanting. But as I got older, it had more meaning to me because I could see just the facts of a Torah scroll are so interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, they're all handwritten, a letter at a time, and they have to say a prayer for each letter.
That was a life. It was life's work.
It was a life's work, and it goes back thousands of years. You know, you have to go into something like Japanese writing or Chinese writing gets some of that same feeling. It was all drawn very carefully. The letters were drawn and so on. And I watched scribes make letters. That was very moving to me. As they would just put that pen to the paper.
I'm just going to ask you a question here.
Sure.
Any positive moments or negative moments that you want to tell people about that shaped who you are today?
The art today, I'm not too close to, frankly. And even during my years growing up, I grew up in the age where really abstract art took almost all control. And I've always liked art that was descriptive, visual, involving human figures. Mm-hmm. And you can see in my work that's predominantly seen things and visible people, and then the religious art is the same thing. It's not copying, it's not photographic, but actual things. And I could.
Can you tell me about somebody who has been kindest to you in your life?
Besides my parents, yeah, teachers, a number of teachers that were sympathetic to what I was doing, some that were not tuned to it. But generally, I kept to my own way. I was always interested. I studied as much of the art world as I could. Old masters, mm-hmm. new masters, mm-hmm. modern, mm-hmm. Different art from different countries. And it's, what is it, countries and language, different cultures, art from different cultures. I've always been interested in cultures.
How has your life been different from what you imagined it would be?
Not too much.
Not too much, huh?
Not too much. I didn't know what it would be like. I knew I didn't want to be in business. I didn't want to go to my dad's
business.
And
you didn't?
No, and my mother realized it. My dad was scared of it because he thought I was going to just starve out somewhere trying to be an artist, which was not far from the order of things. I mean, it was a precarious thing, but it really wasn't, because by that time art was taught in all the universities.
Let's talk about romance.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you meet your wife?
I met my wife in Austin or Houston? But in Houston, and I wish Becky was here now. She could tell us.
You can just tell me about your first date.
My first date.
How you came to meet her.
Oh, yeah, we came to meet, and let's see.
Was it friends who introduced you, or were you in
That's what I'm trying to remember, who introduced me.
Sorry to be.
when I lived in Houston, I was going to school in Austin, so... But how I got to Houston.
Well, how about the first time you met her?
First time I met her was our first date, and that was I must have been near Austin at that time. I was still living in San Antonio.
Okay.
And there was always, in any big city, a kind of a network. You know, Jewish families would always guide the young boys to Jewish girls, which most of the time we went with, sometimes not. But so parents would, have girls for us to meet. They had girls to get married off and so on. And
you got lucky.
I got very lucky, yeah. Very, very lucky. Have you met Becky?
I did.
Yeah, and I met her, must have met her in Houston, and I think it was Becky's sisters that introduced me to her. She's the youngest in her family, I'm the youngest in my family. And I'm trying to remember why I was there in Houston.
That's okay.
Right, but we'll find. Becky will remember.
Sure.
And we met, and really about 3 or 4 months later, we were married. We got married. It was very quick. We were in love with each other, and it's been that way since.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, thank you. It is. We're very lucky.
Tell me about that picture of that son of yours.
He's adopted.
Okay.
And he's quite a fine young man. Did you ever get to meet him? I'd like for you to meet. He would like meeting you, I know.
And what does he do?
He's working in rehab work as a counselor. I don't know exactly, but he counsels with alcoholics and drug addict people, and then he studies that. And
Those people are angels, really.
They really are. Yes, they are. Yeah.
That's difficult work, and it's incredibly important.
Yes, yeah, thank you. It is, and that's what he likes. And I'm glad he likes it. And you're right, they're splendid people.
How do you feel about adoption, and why did you adopt?
We couldn't have children. Mm-hmm. We weren't successful at it. And I was getting to accept it, but Becky did want a child. So we'd adopted one. I was in favor of it. Wanted a child also. And we met Becky's sister, Shirley. She's like a second mother to her. Because her mother died early. Becky was 8. Her mother had died. So Becky's sister, Shirley, saw to it, that I would go with Becky got us together, and that was a short time afterwards, just a few months, that we decided to get married.
That's nice.
Been happy ever after.
Here's a challenging question.
Okay.
If you were to die suddenly this evening, what would you most regret not having told somebody? Mm-hmm. And if you can think of something, Why haven't you told them?
I've told everything, okay. I don't think.
That's a great place to be.
It is a great place. I've never had anything to hide.
I mean, it's a lot of people who have always meant to fill in the blank and never did it.
No, we did that.
Good.
We did make an effort to do that. And I would have many discussions with Joshua, you know, about my life as a child and growing up. He was interested in all of that.
Okay. And we have a little time left.
Sure.
For your great-grandchildren listening to this years from now, is there any wisdom you'd want to pass on to them? Would you want them to?
My pictures, and my paintings and books. I hope they would enjoy those.
And if you wanted to go into the artistic path, you should have the courage to do it?
I have encouraged them. My mother and father and all of us have, in fact, even in our own family. I know my dad wanted me to go into the dry goods business, and because that was for him, you know, he grew up with that and made a good living, and he loved it.
Well, he had developed a brand.
There was no store like it. It was quite, it was not just selling. He liked the people, and he liked doing what he did. Mm-hmm. In my later years, I discovered he actually had more art talent than he would ever admit to. Because, you know, he sold clothes to people. And I never thought much about it till later years that, he could dress a person just by looking at them. And very often that's what he did. He would pick out clothes from the store that he knew that people would like, and usually that's what they'd really like. And he would see it on them. He could see it on them, and he knew it would look good on them. It was like almost artistic, like a portrait he's making, finishing out a portrait of a person.
That's what I was thinking as you were speaking.
Yeah, and the way he did with the clothes and the store and everything, I come to realize how much art talent he had, which he would never have admitted to. But he did, you know, sensitivity to people.
Sure.
And same with my mother.
He could read customers.
Read customers and do the best thing for them.
Encourage them to go on the right path.
And yes, everything. Right. They had my dad and would talk with people sometimes half a morning, all hour a morning, just for one person. They'd talk what's going on in the world, business, everything. It was like a small town, you know. It was all small town.
Like the center of the small town.
Was the center of it, and was a, I would consider it a rich environment, because it had a depth to it. Everybody knew everybody, and knew everybody's friends and ancestors and
now,
everything.
Did they have Sunday houses like in some parts of Texas, where the farmers would come in on the to do business on the weekends?
I'm sure they did. We did, but I didn't see too much of that, because they would be probably with relatives. Mm-hmm. But we would see on a daily basis, farmers from the local area would be shopping at our store. They knew me. We knew them.
You're famous.
But they were just doing what they did.
Sure.
And I think that had a big influence on a lot of my subject matter, because that's when I, later on, you know.
You're a student of people.
People, and I love watching the agricultural cycles. Mm-hmm. I miss that. Tractors, and they were moving in the fields, and seasonal changes, and all of that stuff. All the details of it, and many sketches and drawings. It came over me very slowly, but I realized that was very important to me.
I think we should wrap it up.
Sure, that's fine. I appreciate it. Thank you. Now, you got to stop me, because artists are mad about it.
No, it's good.
Appreciate it very much.